Bel Air, the official podcast, is produced by iHeart Podcast Network and Peacock.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the official Bel Air podcast. We're so excited to have you listening to us today, and we're so excited to talk about the new show.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I am DJ Jazzy Jeff from West Philadelphia, born and raised from the original cast of The Fresh Prince of Bel Air, and I am super excited to talk about this show.
And I'm just a diehard Fresh Prince fan. I don't know where they found me to come talk about the show, but I'm so excited to be here. My name is Aida Osman. I'm a writer, producer, actress, and host of the Crooked Media podcast, Keep It. And we just watched the first three episodes of Bel-Air. And let me tell you.
Yep. Wow.
We're so excited to have a podcast about it.
Yes. And the point of this podcast is not to rehash every second of the show, but more so just to discuss what we're seeing in the real world dynamics of an on-screen drama. It's a culture podcast. It's a TV podcast, but it's not a recap podcast.
We do want to differentiate because the new iteration is dramatically different from the original. The primary difference is this version's a drama, where the show was originally a sitcom. What makes it the same is that stylistically, they are very much capturing the moment that we exist in now, and both shows have a strong voice, but they're tackling modern day issues facing society in their own way.
Yeah. And every episode will be tackling a theme presented in the show. So in this episode, we're going to talk to the show creator, Morgan Cooper, about what made him want to reimagine this show and why it was so important to have Philly take center stage.
Wow. Howard, before we even get into it, how are you feeling seeing the new Jazz?
Listen, first of all, you know, I was a little nervous because I wanted to make sure that Jazz was represented right, and I am so cool in this new show.
Who the hell are you?
Jazz. What up?
Jazz. Thank you for your time, Jazz.
Thank you for your money, Phil.
So I'm happy. I'm happy. Jazz is good. He's on point.
He's smooth. He's a hustler. He and Will have a great relationship right off top. It's exactly what I wanted to see.
And I like Jazz's car.
Jazz has a dope car too. Yes, he really does. Okay, so Jeff, what for you was the most surprising moment of the first episode?
I think the biggest surprise on screen for me was Carlton. You know, I was just curious to see if Carlton was going to be the nerdy, the super smart, and Carlton has swag. I can't say that enough. Like, I'm so shocked that Will is so confused that Carlton is actually the cool guy in the school that has to show Will the ropes.
Look, we have a different set of rules here, okay? If you want to do well, just keep your head down and follow my lead.
Whoa, pause, stop, flag on the play. I know you didn't just tell me to follow your lead.
I do kind of run the place. Hey, catch you later, cheese eggs.
Hey, yo, what the hell am I supposed to do?
As long as it doesn't involve embarrassing me or my family, go for it. Frolic. Be creative. Meet me in the locker room at 3 and I'll introduce you to the guys.
I was so shocked by the level of wealth. Because think about in the original sitcom, we're getting a fully dressed set. We're getting an idea of how much money the banks have. Their name is literally the banks. We know they got money. But to see this multi-million dollar mansion that they used filmed. I was pissed too. I said, Morgan Cooper, you could have invited us.
I'm like, wow, like, this is great. I want to go. I want to go to the bank's mansion and get thrown out.
So many moments of Black wealth and really important questions being asked about what it means for Black families to ascend classes and how they surpass social structure and what that means for Will when he shows up from Philly from a single mother household and now he just has to become part of this climate and you can see how overwhelming it is for him. But my favorite part is how much he matures so quickly in three episodes.
He has to. It was beautiful. Just him having to adapt. You know, we are so used to having to adapt into an environment that is not ours that it was very refreshing to watch how Aunt Viv kind of pulled him to the side and basically gave her account of having to adapt just like that when she got out there. So she was giving him the game and he picked up on it.
Yeah. Will has a second chance that most Black men from underserved communities don't have a chance. He gets to leave Philadelphia, start over. Literally, he gets to live. He gets to live. He doesn't have to remain in the situation. Yes, not just live, but live well.
Yes.
And I think that opportunity really comes out when we find out that Trey gets shot, his friend who stays in Philadelphia. And it's important to highlight how Black men, when given the right circumstances, can succeed, can do well. But when all the cards are stacked up against them, we have the Trey situation. Or we have,
it's tough.
Yeah. And you can speak to that, being from West Philly, understanding that the men around you are, things are stacked up against them.
This was so authentic for me, and just understanding, you know, like I said, having to leave Philadelphia and come to LA and it be a completely different situation, and to have those kind of opportunities presented that a lot of the people you left back in Philly will never get.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that plays on you. You know, you're sitting there saying, I'm getting this opportunity of a lifetime while all of my friends are still stuck back in the hood.
Yeah, there's like a sense of, and we see Will's character experience this survivor's guilt, right?
Yeah, about, he jumped over the gate. He was about to go home.
Mm-hmm, he tried it. He tried it. They're both out there ready. And I think, too, there's so many themes occurring around the Black family and the concept of the Black family, and how the Black family's role is to take care of the young. And when a Black mom in West Philly can't do that no more, she has to send her son to Bel Air where he can start over. And then he has a whole team of people that are trying to make sure he wins as long as he works for it.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
This show is beautiful. And for those of you that have watched it and you're catching up, that's amazing. And for those of you who are listening to this first, go watch Bel Air. What y'all doing?
Yes, please. I'm super excited that we had a chance to talk to Morgan Cooper, the creator of the show, and ask him some really in-depth questions just about what was his reasoning and why did he pick Philly. It's amazing.
Morgan Cooper is such a bright light in the industry already. At this early stage in his career, he's such a kind man. He's articulate, he's smart, genius, I could even say. And he told us everything that he could tell us about where the idea came from, how he executed it, how he made the original short film, how it turned into a 2-season order from Peacock. it's a great interview. Hello, everyone. We want to introduce you to our very special first guest, who was the obvious choice for the official Bel Air podcast. We have the cinematographer, creator in the building. His name is Morgan Cooper. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? So excited to be here with you guys.
Yes, so happy to have you. So happy to have you. We are clearly obsessed with the project. We have so many questions for you and want to know where this dramatic retelling came from and where you got the confidence, the excitement, and the willingness to do it. I think my first question for you is just from where?
Yeah.
Where did it come from?
You know, it's interesting. A while ago, somebody told me this concept. I think they read it in a book where, like, ideas are these things that are floating in the ether, looking for a human host to bring them to life. And I was driving down 71 Highway in my hometown of Kansas City, and I drove under this overpass, and the entire idea, the entire vision hit me all in the matter of like 5 to 10 seconds. And I came out under the other side, and it was all there. It was all there. The tone of the show, the textures, the language, the quality of light, the cinematography was all, it all hit me in a single idea. And that's always how my mind has worked as an artist, is like a singular vision. And the feeling that I'm chasing being the filter for, you know, the camera choice, the lens choice, the lighting choice, the music, the tones. And so it all hit me at once. And, you know, that night I wrote an outline for the short, and we got to work. So
it was definitely a shock when everyone saw the trailer, just the idea of, you know, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air being reimagined as a drama, like people really, really lost it, and it just went viral everywhere. Did you expect that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I've always been of the mind, and this is something that my, you know, my parents imparted me, is, you know, when I was younger, is that like all you can control is your actions and what you do, and you got to let the people decide. And so for me, it was all about just expressing this idea I was so incredibly passionate about. Like, the vision was so strong, and it was an idea that kept me up at night. And so, you know, I knew the first day of shooting, you know, I remember that we the very first day of shooting, we were in my auntie's living room in Kansas City. And it was the scene with Will's mom and Will. And she said, look at you, you know, and she told him, like, you know, you're going to Bel Air. Like, that was the scene. And I knew after an hour, I was like, I think this thing could be out of here. Like, it was really, really special. Like, it was just this magic that was just so palpable. But once again, just like head down, like, you know what I mean? Just like, focus on the art, focus on the vision, because that's what's real. You know what I mean? So just staying radically present and the thing that we're making and the collaboration was of the utmost importance. But I actually have a quick question for y'all real quick.
Oh, here you go.
Hey, Jeff, be honest. Like, did you hate it the first time you saw it, or were you rocking with it? And where were you when you saw it?
I was rocking with it so hard because, you know, just being a creative, to watch the spin that you put on it, I was kind of like, wow, like this is like me hearing a great remix. Mm. Like you took the original and put an amazing spin on it. And I was like, oh my God, I never saw that coming.
Wow.
I was inspired by it because, you know, as I think mostly a big fan as a child, you know, all of us really. And then being a TV writer myself and having certain expectations for what a television show should be or what a trailer should be, and y'all just blew it out the water. Like, you can't fight that. People were generally averse to reboots. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The way y'all didn't match the old show, y'all didn't surpass the old show. You didn't have to. You created a whole new lane for yourselves that you can't even compare the two shows. You can only give credit for where y'all made differences. And it's beautiful. I think it was a beautiful first trailer.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And listen, like, Jeff, what you guys did back is like so incredibly iconic and can never be done again. Like, that was lightning in a bottle, a once in a lifetime, once in a generation thing that you guys did. And so to try to do that same thing and reboot it in the same way that you guys did it would have been just a disservice to everybody, because you can never match what you guys did. You see what I'm saying? So like, really the goal and the intention was to create something that honored what you guys did while truly standing on its own. You know what I mean? And so I hope, you know, when the fans watch it, they understand that we're really honoring the spirit of these characters that we all know and love. In this fish out of water story with, you know, this young Black man from West Philadelphia coming to Bel Air and the culture clash that ensues. We hope people enjoy the ride, because, you know, it's definitely going to be a fun one for sure.
I think too, to go back to the original and talking about this remake, is that I see TV as kind of like this march where we create the content that we believe audiences are ready for and are ready to perceive and welcome into their homes. And clearly the current climate, as we've been talking about on the podcast already, the current climate deserved and has been begging for a show like Bel Air Now, where you take a chance to actually talk about what Will was experiencing in Philadelphia. So can you talk a little bit about why you guys chose, especially to make the first episode, pretty much the retelling of the intro sequence to the original? Can you talk about why it was important to include Philly in this story?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've always rocked heavy with Philly. Like, growing up, like, our favorite rappers, you know, Freeway was bumped heavy in Kansas City. Like, all the Rockefeller guy, like, State Property, Beans, you know, Jeff, Will, just like, that was a sound that we really appreciated in Kansas City. So I've always had Cassidy, like, on the old, like, on the battle rap tip, like, everything that was happening with Reed Dollaz and those guys, it, like, really mattered to us growing up. Like, we were passing around those DVDs in middle school, you know? And so it's always, I've always felt a strong connection to it. And so, you know, for me, there was no way that we could have done this and not shown Philly and be on location in Philly. Like, we're on 60th and Market. That was the very first day of shooting, was on 60th and Market. And really the goal was to just honor that community and show why it was so hard for Will to leave. Like, of course, there are the struggles of his neighborhood, but there's beauty in it as well. And so we wanted to make sure to just show the beauty that is West Philly and the rich, vibrant culture. And Philly has just such a specific texture that you can't emulate. And so, you know, there was never any question. I said right off rip, like, guys, like, we have to go to Philly. We have to be boots on the ground. We have to touch down in the city, pay our respect. So we tapped in with Gilly. You know what I mean? We had to tap in with Gilly, and he had us right as we made our way through our scout. And it was just an incredible experience. And I remember being on 60th and Market, and, you know, kids coming up to us and, you know, and just being able to engage with the community, and for them to see somebody that looked like them, you know, doing what we were doing, I know it had an impact. And that's something that's very important for me, is that, you know, through the art, making a change, you know, any way we can. So, incredible experience. And I hope Philly is really proud of how we captured it.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, watching just how authentic it was being from Philly, because, you know, that's a really big thing. You nailed it. Nailed it. Like, there were people in there that I may not actually know, but I know. Yeah. You know, you nailed it, you know. So, you know, you definitely did Philly proud.
Thank you.
And I just think, especially now, the authenticity of something matters so much that you go back to the place and it wasn't someone from somewhere else, you know, acting like they were from Philly. These were real Philadelphians.
100%. Yeah. All of the background was from Philly. We had, you know, two actors, and Jabari, you know, who spent a lot of his time in Philly as well. But, you know, Easy, the Black Captain from Philly, you know what I mean? Who had a phenomenal yes. performance in it. And, you know, we got D4M Sloan as well. You know, shout out to Sloan from West Philly. And that was really important. And so it's interesting when we were casting for those roles, something that was really important is that we had Philly guys play those roles. And so, you know, it was amazing. You know, I handpicked those guys. You know, Sloan, I was just a fan of his music because I love the Philly music that's happening right now. It's just incredible and super inspired. And seeing Sloan and his energy in the music videos, you know what I mean? I was like, I think Sloan would be perfect for Darnell. So I sent his name to casting. And he blew everybody away with his audition and won the role. And same thing with Easy. You know, I'm a battle rap fan. And he was barking on somebody. Yeah. He was just barking on him. I was like, we need somebody who really talks different to people. And that's what Easy does, you know. And so sent his name along to casting. And he did his audition and once again blew everybody away and got the part. And so it's amazing to be able to change lives in that way as well, to show that, you know, there's so much talent in hip hop that just need an opportunity. And once they get that opportunity, like Jeff, like Will, look where you guys took it. And so the hope is that, you know, Sloan, Easy, the Black Captain, the rest of these new actors that people are going to get to see, you know, just people will be able to see their careers continue to blossom and flourish. So
I wanted to ask you, because I think to pursue a project like this, like you have to see a bit of yourself in Will's character, probably a lot of yourself in Will's character. Clearly a little bit more evolved version of him. You a little grown, got a little more, your beard connect. But but also, I wanted to ask you the importance of, we've been talking about opportunity on the podcast before you came through too, and we're carving out opportunities for yourself as a cinematographer and creator. Like, you had a vision for something, you gathered a team to make it a reality, and you created this world. You got a 2-season order from Peacock, which is unheard of in the TV world. Like, let's call it what it is. That's damn near never happened. Unless you're an animated show, that doesn't happen. So I wanted to ask you about, like, what this opportunity means for you as a Black man and what it means for other Black men in the industry.
It means everything, you know what I mean? And more than anything, it's like there's so many, you know, young Black boys and girls who they need to be able to see someone and say, like, I can do that. Like, I can pick up my iPhone and make a movie and tell my story as well. And so it takes representation in order to change this business and create a healthier industry. And so it really means everything. And honestly, it just shows the power, what I feel, of manifestation and passion, you know what I mean? And making sure that you put in those 10,000 hours of work so that when that idea comes, you're ready to execute it. You know, there are a lot of people who have great ideas, but they haven't really put in the work, you know, to be able to execute it at the highest level. And so when people see even the short film, one of the reasons I think it connected with people so much is because of the execution of how it was done. And so in these frames with how I lit it and how I shot it, you know, 10,000 hours of just being in the bunker working on the craft, you know, so when it's time and that idea hit me, we jump on it and we're ready to rock and roll. And so it means everything. And I hope it inspires the next generations of storytellers to tell their story fearlessly and, you know, listen to that crazy big creative idea that you have and pursue it. Don't be afraid of that idea. Run towards it. You know, we don't duck smoke or dodge wreck is what I like to say. We don't. You got to run towards it.
Even if Will Smith is at the other side.
Okay. So Will and Westbrook reached out 23 hours and 45 minutes after the short film dropped. Okay. You know, his Westbrook media team, which is one of the best in the business, like, he has just a team that is so on top of what's happening on the internet. And so it made its way to him. He was on the set of Bad Boys 3. And up until I got that email from Westbrook saying, hey, you know, Will loves it, would love to connect with you the next day in Calabasas. Up until that moment, part of me was like, damn, am I going to get sued? I'm not going to lie. Like, the moment the idea hit me years ago, like, I was just like, you know, I'm going to make this thing, but I got to be ready for a lawsuit if that's what happens. But, you know, you got to just do it. You know what I mean? But I knew it was coming from an honest place, you know what I mean? And so you gotta run towards it, so.
Yeah, and I think coming from, you know, Will's perspective and even both of our perspectives, we did not have this kind of access, when The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air started. Like, we weren't able to create something on our own. We often have conversations about what if we had an iPhone or just the capabilities or even social media when we started, what would we be? So to watch what you did and on your own, like, first of all, just from an independent creator, that is amazing. And I know that was going to resonate with him. Like, that was something that I knew as soon as he saw this, he was going to say, oh my God, this is amazing. I need to meet this guy.
Man, that's so dope, man. I really appreciate you saying that. I got to give a huge shout out to everybody who worked on that original short film, you know, who believed in that vision, you know, that the original cast. I always say it's like I've met three iterations of this cast. You know, the short film, right? That version of this family, the actual show Bel-Air. And then at the reunion, Jeff, that was the first time I met you where I met that. So I've met three versions of this family. And Jeff, I'm curious, how do you think for you, like if you did have an iPhone, you know, back when you and Will were doing your thing, what would that look like for you?
Oh, man. Just in making music today, having the tools that we have and the access, you know, you used to need a really big company to take your music in order to get it to the people. And right now, you can take your art and upload it and post it and have a million people love it instantly. So just having that access is very different. You can take a lot of those chances and a lot of those risks that, you know, otherwise other people wouldn't take. You know, you having a camera, you know, someone having a computer and being able to record, you know, video or audio and just present it to the world was like a flying car to us back then.
I'm interested, like, the show has so many different themes that we're going to get into, but one of them of feeling like an outcast, because we talk about opportunity, but how often do we talk about how Black people still feel comfortable once they're in the midst of that opportunity? Like, what's your support system look like? Who's actually trying to bring your vision down? Namely, the moment with Hillary when she gets the interview with the cooking magazine and they say to her, well, it's just too spicy. Your food is too spicy. Change it. So, like, can you talk a little bit about how you relate to that narrative, whether it's creating art in the past and how maybe other people have tried to water it down or change it so that they feel more comfortable?
Absolutely. You know, growing up in Kansas City, I didn't see anybody, you know, there were no film. I didn't know any filmmakers, you know, certainly no Black filmmakers. I didn't even know this was a career, right? It was something that started for me in the line of a Best Buy when I graduated high school and bought a little T2i and was in the hood shooting these low budget one man band music videos. Like, that was my film school, right? And so when I was looking to transition into commercials, it really felt like I was on the outside looking in. You know, I have to enter this space where nobody looks like me, nobody talks like me. And, you know, here are my music videos with, we got, you know, Old Boy in the Trap House right here. And that's what I got to show for it. You know what I mean? And like, there's art in there, but they could never understand those experiences. And so, like, absolutely, like, being on the outside looking in, you know, has been a big part of my journey. But you know, here's the thing, like, we have to pioneer our futures, especially as Black artists, you know what I mean? It's Black stories are still, if you think about it in terms of, like, the dawn of cinema, it's still new, you know what I mean? It's like, we didn't have in the silent film era and stuff like that, you know, films that were telling our story in nuanced ways. And so, like, we're having a chance to still, like, pioneer and tell our stories. And we have to do it fearlessly and unapologetically and not ask for permission, because it ain't gonna come. Like, if we ask for permission, the answer's gonna be, like, we have to kick down the doors and be bold and say, no, like, I believe in this. We're telling this story no matter what, and nothing's gonna stop us, you know?
Definitely.
I just had a quick question for you guys. Like, what was the most, like, shocking or surprising scene? Was there a moment where it was just like, whoa, a particular scene that really caught you off guard?
For me, and immediately, it was the character choice you guys made with Carlton. Because I think it was, immediately I was like, oh, what are y'all doing? He played lacrosse and people like him? What
is this? But, Carlton is a baller.
Exactly. I was very shocked, but I don't think that the original version of what Alfonso did could ever be emulated. He's the most iconic character on television. There's a whole dance named after what he used to do in the show. So it had to be done. So that was what was shocking to me.
It's funny. I felt like that you picked up The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in 1992 and moved it to 2022 and made it a drama and made it exactly how it would be if it was. Like, and that was the thing. I'm watching this and I immediately forgot about the original Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like, this is a whole other thing. You just took the idea and you made it into something that I'm sitting here saying, this is, it was 15 minutes in and I was like, this is amazing. And what I love is you showed so much and then the credits came on. Like, I was like, wait a minute, the show hasn't started yet? Like, that was amazing. That was a mic drop moment.
Wow. Thank you, man. Thank you so much. And I'm curious how you guys responded to when Carlton walked into the locker room, the Bobby Shmurda.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. When Carlton is, he's shucking and jiving for the whole team.
Yeah, he was
shmoney dancing. Was rocking.
Yeah. Oh, he was going in. I want to admit now that I am also from the Midwest.
Oh, okay.
It's a painful thing for me. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. So Casey's very, very close to
me. Yeah.
And I have witnessed things of that ilk where it's like I see a black man just allowing the white men around him to say the N-word because he hasn't matured to the place you need to be at. The things that Will has learned growing up in Philly, the things that he knows are not acceptable. Carlton doesn't have a grasp of that.
Day one at Bel Air Academy and you're already playing the race card.
Hell
good
yeah,
job,
I'm
Will.
Pulling a race card, Carlton.
It's just a word, dude. Chill out.
No, I ain't chilling out. Your boy Chad was wilding, yo.
First of all, his name is Connor.
Connor, Chad, Brad, whatever the fuck his Wonder Bread ass name is, he ain't with the culture, Carlton.
So that was a moment where I almost had to slam the laptop down because it was so close to home. Like, I get it. I feel for Carlton, but also check them.
Yeah,
check the Connors.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes. There's so much authenticity in this that it's ridiculous. Even the mom being from Philly, moving out to L.A., realizing that she kind of has to change her approach to things, and sometimes you can't take that Philly swag with you. That hit home.
I was the same way when I first showed up here. I mean, I was bound and determined to keep my West Philly rep. It was challenging.
So what, you changed?
No, I adapted. It's a part of life, Will.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's easy when you have money.
No, it became easy when I found my people. My people who just were cool, who just let me be myself. But that kind of respect goes both ways.
And the Will coming out and feeling like an outcast, you know, I was saying that I felt like I related to that with what you showed. I related that to that with the original Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. But we also related to that coming from Philly out to L.A. So we related to that in real life, that this isn't where you are. This isn't, you know, what you normally do. And you have to kind of be able to adapt.
That's right. Yeah. And the language is so different, you know, especially Philly, like the Philly vernacular is so specific. And so like from a communication standpoint, I you know, coming from Philly to LA, where it's like, you know, more of a melting pot of all types of people in LA. But, you know, it's interesting, like the culture clash and the conversations that we're able to have. And that was important for us, is to have those uncomfortable conversations on screen. You know, when you see, two young black men from completely different places and all of a sudden, you know, those two forces colliding and the conversations that come out of it, that was something really exciting to explore. And with Carlton specifically, it's so interesting because a lot of people have been talking about, you know, Carlton, like he's so different from him. But like in my mind, this is the only way he could have been. You know what I mean? It was just the spirit of these characters. And let's ground it. Like, what would that really, really look like? And so hopefully people really connect with our takes on each of these characters.
I really like how Jazz and Will met for the first time in the car. You know, especially, you know, somebody like me, I'm sitting there like, okay, I need to see how this is going to be played out. And I thought it was so perfect, you know, of Jazz giving him advice on not losing himself, you know, coming to L.A.
People come down here, work three jobs, pay $2,000 a month for some shitty-ass apartment, six roommates, and a stack full of parking tickets. All for this. Now, look, bro, you got to have fun while you're here, but I got a word of advice for you. This town will try to make you forget who you are and where you came from. Don't let it do that.
The example of people getting 5 and 6 jobs, spending $2,000 a month for an apartment just to have that, I love that. I really love that.
Man, that means the world to hear that, Jeff. It really does. Wanted to take extra special care of Jazz. And you know, did you notice the little Easter egg in his 6'4"? Did you notice it?
The MF Doom.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I noticed that.
I saw
too.
That.
Yeah,
I saw that. I saw that.
That was beautiful. That whole scene was actually a magical moment between the music and the lighting, yes, and the seating, yes, position and then the conversation. It was actually beautiful. And my favorite part of it is when he goes, West Philly, right? Like, he knows where he's from. It's this testament to the fact that Black people, we don't got to be from the same place. We speak to struggle and we understand, yes, right, each other, regardless of the whatever hood, whatever city, whatever neighborhood we're coming from. So that was a beautiful moment. And I love that they spoke each other's language. Who don't speak each other's language, Carlton and Will, at all. And I am reminded of that moment where he's in front of the whole school, Carlton is, and he says, how many AP classes did you have at your public school? You know, and he kind of undermines him for the lack of opportunity that he has. And we're all, like, you know, survivors of our circumstances. And Will, growing up in Philly, probably was in an underserved Black community with tired teachers and old textbooks. Yep, and it's the, yep, same story for all of us. So how much of Will and Carlton's relationship is drawing from that stark difference between them when you guys are making creative decisions in the writer's room?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had such a great writer's room, you know, with so many different perspectives, nearly all Black room, you know, half male, half female. So, and we had, you know, one particular writer who went to Harvard Westlake, you know, Black woman, and, you know, gave us a lot of insight to her experience, you know, being the only, you know, or one of very few Black women in her school, you know, and all of the microaggressions that she experienced with, oh, you're pretty for a Black girl. You know what I mean? And that's something all of the Black women I know in my life, like, have all heard that, you know what I mean? Have been told that, pretty for, you know, and all this bullshit like that, you know, that we as Black people have to deal with, especially when we're in situations where the numbers aren't on our side. You see what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, they're talking a little bit more bold because it's just you. And like, you know, and that's a really tough position for Will to be in when you're really feeling like on the outside looking in and you have people looking at you and have experienced all of these different things that you haven't. It's a very vulnerable thing, you know what I mean? And so the great thing about Will and you know, Jabari Banks is phenomenal. We'll talk about him in a little bit, but is that he has the ability to adapt and shine no matter where he is, you know? And so really the challenge for Will this season is maintaining, you know, his authentic self while navigating this new space. And so we see all of the ripples that he creates in everybody's life, you know?
So out of all the characters, like we've talked about, are very different. My favorite rendition being Hillary, because unfortunately she matches me to a T. It's really insulting. I'm a Sue, y'all. but which character do you, Morgan, think is the most different from the original, and why did y'all choose to make that choice?
Ooh, very good question. Most different. You know, probably Carlton. I think Carlton and Hillary, if I'd have to say, are the most different. But I will tell you, the identity of those characters in Bel-Air and our take on those characters, we didn't take the approach of like, oh, we have to make them different just to do it. It was all just like grounding them in modern day. And then what comes out is what comes out. And so I think that's why they're so honest. Like the characters feel so honest and so dimensionalized is because like it was coming from an honest place and real experiences in that writer's room and everybody bringing those experiences onto the page and then onto the screen. And so, but you know, seeing the final result, absolutely Carlton and Hillary. And you know, Ali is such a special actor and so is Coco Jones. Like they just have such a knack for creating moments on screen, really unique emotional moments, and the sky's the limit for them both, really this entire cast.
That's amazing. I love that Coco's character resembles so much of her life. Like I've always known Coco Jones to be that girl on the internet. And so to have that, I'm sure it wasn't that hard to transfer that over to Hillary's character. She did a phenomenal job.
From yes, the first two lines of her read, we all knew. Mm-hmm. All knew it's Coco Jones. Like we all left that call. It was a very short discussion in terms of casting Coco Jones and working with her, you know, on the pilot. I just have so many memories of just when I told her, I said, Coco, you are a star. I just want you to shine bright, take chances. You know what I mean? Really trust your choices. And Coco is an actress who thrives off energy, and she brings that energy and is just such a spark. And that, once again, just has this ability to create really unique moments that elevate what's the material on the page, you know, and can't say enough about her. So
when you were casting Will, what were the most important qualities you were looking for?
I mean, you're looking for a unicorn, because that is what Will was and what Will is, right? You know, there's only one, the real Will Smith, right? And so you need somebody who can step into those shoes with pure confidence, has to have, you know, be the total package. He has to have the look, he has to have the swag, the charisma, athletic ability. Jabari can hoop, you know what I mean? He has to have great body control, because he's going to be playing a lot of basketball. And, you know, you're watching the pilot, he's doing a lot of different things. You see what I'm saying? And so you need somebody who has the stamina and ability to not only act with the words, but also his physicality. And we found him in Jabari. And I remember we were scouting in Philly, and Jabari came down. He was in D.C. at the time, and he came down from D.C., and we met, and I saw him. He had this little grubby little mustache. I was like, I think this is Will. Like, we spoke, and just how deep of a well he is. He's just such a special human being and has such a big heart. And we went outside of this hotel, and I had my little Fuji camera on me, and we took some stills, and right away just caught a vibe. And I looked at those stills, and I said, I think we found our guy. And so we were in a callback session, and he still had his little mustache. And I said, hey Jabari, let me just stop you for a second. Can you do me a favor? Can you go shave that real quick? just go ahead and shave it. Like,
no.
Yeah. So I told him, you know, can you go and shave it? Just want to just take a look, like this role with there'd be no mustache, you know, so just want to see without it. He came back. I knew definitively it was Jabari Banks after he shaved that mustache. No question in my mind. And, you know, He got the part, and since that very first take on 60th and Market in West Philly, he set the tone right away and really demonstrated why he's a star that's just going to continue to grow in this business for years to come.
And the serendipity of his last name being Banks. I was like, yes. This, what? That can't be right. There was a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an amazing actor. I can't wait to see. I mean, he's here for a while. He's with y'all for a while. I pray y'all get as many seasons as you want to tell this story, but I can't wait to see what he does with his career. But you know, when people are watching this, what do you want them to hold in their mind about Will's story, about Philadelphia, about what it means to have these chances, a second chance? Essentially, that's what both of these shows are about, is creating mm-hmm. a second chance and getting to live in that. So what do you want the audience to keep in mind as they're watching the show?
You know, the way that Will is thrust out of his environment into a new world is a traumatic thing, you know what I mean? But to see the resilience within him and within that family as, you know, this huge ripple within all of their lives starts to take shape throughout the season, my hope is that it gives viewers out there the courage to show that resilience in really challenging times when you're thrown into a new situation, you know, to where it's like, no, like, walk in there with your head held high, who you are, don't forget where you came from, and shine bright and be a star. You know what I mean? My hope is that people take that away, because we all have that within us. We really do. And the amount of resilience that Will shows for him to be in this place where he feels like he's on the outside looking in, but stepping into it fearlessly and courageously and taking his lumps. You know what I mean? No road to where we want to be is perfect and pretty all the time. You know, you're going to have to take those lumps and fall down and get back up. But the strength of that family lifting each other up in those moments, those challenging moments, is what I hope people can really connect to and carry that into their lives, you know, long after the credits roll. So
that's it. He did it.
Thank you, Morgan. Morgan, we're so, so excited to keep watching the show. We're so fortunate that you came to talk to us today. I feel that much smarter about the show. How you feeling, Jeff?
I'm great. I am so great. Like, you've put an exclamation point on everything that I wanted.
Wow, that's beautiful. And I think the next episode we'll get into more about the music, but I got to give a big shout out to Terrace Martin and Robert Glasper, you know, the composers. Mm-mm-mm. On the
That's
show.
My brothers.
Let's go. Some of the best, if not the best, let me just say it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Special humans, mm-hmm. special artists who brought just such a beautiful texture sonically, you know, through the score. And Jeff, I was in the studio with those guys, and they told me a story about this camp that you have, where it's just like everybody falls through this camp. Like,
yes,
if you don't know about Jazz's camp, like, you don't be knowing. Like, everybody's there. They told me a story about how I think it's Redman. He was just skateboarding.
Yes.
This camp, yes. Thing or whatever. But they told me how special that experience is, and that was just really inspiring to hear some of those stories, and the respect that they have for you is unmatched. You know what I mean? So just appreciate you for just laying just so much incredible groundwork so that, you know, we're able to make this art and take it further. So just I want to give you your flowers, man. Like, thank you just for so much inspiration throughout my entire life, really.
And I appreciate you for taking the baton and running. Like, you ran through a brick wall. And what you don't realize is you're looking at us for inspiration, but you're inspiring people who did it before you that didn't have those same kind of opportunities to keep going. So thank you.
I humbly receive that. Thank you.
I'm glad we ended the interview in tears, y'all. Thank you so much. Again. What? Oh, thank you guys so much. I appreciate this.
I wasn't supposed to get emotional.
What?
I wasn't supposed to get flowers.
Once again, thank you to Morgan Cooper for joining us. We had such a special and great conversation with him. Next week, we'll be back talking about the iconic style of the show and how its creators have used art and music to build the worlds of both Philly and Bel Air.
And check out next week's episode of Bel Air streaming on Peacock this Thursday. And come back to the podcast every Friday to hear more.
Bel Air, the official podcast, is produced by iHeart Podcast Network and Peacock.
This show is hosted by me, DJ Jazzy Jeff.
And by me, Aida Osman.
Supervising producer, Mike Coscarelli.
Producer and mastering engineer, Bahid Frazier.
Executive producers from iHeart are Nikki Etor, Anna Stumpf, and Miles Gray.
Executive producers from Peacock are Lindsay Vogelman and Amber Ferguson.
And special thanks to Will Pearson from iHeart and Michael Scoggin from Peacock.